Hello and welcome to the Journeyman Podcast. I'm Joseph Corlett.
I'm Mark Reeves.
Join us as we travel from club to club, delving into the stories, tales and myths that have helped define the ethos and identities of football clubs all over the world.
We'll look at club history from all angles, whether it be the team's tactical style, superstitious fan rituals, or discussing the best players to grace the show.
From our base in Berlin, we aspire to give clubs of all sizes the platform to discuss their greatest triumphs and toughest heartbreaks.
We'll take you through fascinating untold stories with tales of heroes, villains, promotions, relegations and everything in between.
And we're back for episode 6. Of the Journeyman Podcast. We had a great time in Suffolk with Ipswich Town last time out. We had a brilliant response, so thank you to all the Ipswich Town fans who got in touch on Twitter, on our social platforms. It was really nice to see.
Loads of great stories coming in from them, some pictures as well, and tales of following Ipswich on those European away days. So yeah, thank you to everybody who gave it a listen, and yeah, especially the Ipswich fans for welcoming us with open arms.
It was great. I'd like to think we are honorary tractor boys.
Adopted tractor boys. Yeah. I'm saving up for my John Deere as we speak.
Clinging onto the back. We've got a brand new club to jump into. So, Mark, can you reveal who the new team we're going to be travelling to is?
Yeah, so you know the drill by now. Our little teaser we left you last time. So it was, who did Ipswich Town beat in the semi-finals en route to their historic 1980-81 UEFA Cup triumph? It was, of course, FC Cologne, one of the biggest supported clubs in Germany, and that's who we're going to be going through over these next two episodes.
Bobby Robson's Ipswich Town won 2-0 over two legs with back-to-back 1-0 wins. To give Köln their full title of being Erster Fußballklub Köln 1-7 EV, the full administerial kind of title as they have here in Germany. And we'd completely forgotten, going back through the script, that we'd actually mentioned Köln by name in the introduction to our Porto episode, talking about how to describe how big FC Porto's fan base was in comparison to German teams.
If only we were that organised to claim we planned that. but yeah, sheer coincidence. Similar to Porto and Hamburg, like many of other Germany's other professional football clubs, Köln is part of a larger sports club with teams in other sports like handball, table tennis, gymnastics, all sort of things like that.
And their nicknames being Die Gleisbocker, or in English, the Billy Goats, or simply known as FC, as in from the FC Köln, FC, as it is in German.
But yeah, we know the drill by now, and of course, the most important part of the pod. In fact, you can probably turn off after hearing this, but this is the most important part.
No, Marks, don't say that.
most importantly, FC Köln, were known as Domstadt in Pro Evolution Soccer 5, translates to Cathedral City in English, so Pro Evo going for the pure literal translations. We were disappointed to see on the Domstadt badge on PES there wasn't like a sheep instead of a goat or a pig or something like that. Yes, but Domstadt.
My previous knowledge about FC Köln, I didn't really know loads other than they were a very well supported team in Germany, and that's mainly one of the reasons why I suggested we do this episode, and that Köln, as a city, has a big reputation for loving a party and loving a beer.
Yeah, and I'd say for me, Köln's probably the club I know the least about that we've covered so far. I think the main thing I knew is Lukas Podolski played from like 2-3 times, was an absolute legend. And also the city itself being like the birthplace of like sort of perfume Köln and the small little beers called Kölsch.
We like to do here, we like to introduce not just the football club but the city and the surroundings that, well, surround the club, and we're going to jump into some like local geography and the landscape around Western Germany.
Indeed, and Köln is based in the west of Germany and is the largest city in Germany's most populous state of North Rhine-Westphalia, with 3.6 million inhabitants calling it home.
It's just over 100 kilometres from Dortmund, or over 500 kilometres from both Munich and Berlin. We are sad to say that this kills our streak of port cities, port-based clubs. We'd enjoyed the sea air, but unfortunately we have to come inland. But
we're slowly working our way in. There is still a river, so we're keeping the water alive. But yeah, it's a sad end, actually.
And, we'll have to enjoy a couple of Köln beers.
We need to come back in style with the next club. Like, it's literally like the club is a port. Like,
to give context behind Köln's name in PES, as Darmstadt, the city's medieval Catholic Cologne Cathedral, or the Kölner Dom, is the third tallest church and tallest cathedral in the world.
Yeah, it's a globally recognised landmark, one of the most visited sites and pilgrim destinations in Europe. The spires of the Kölner Dom are actually silhouetted in the background of Cologne's badge as well, and the skyline further shaped by 12 Romanesque churches of Cologne, all based in the old town of the sea.
As Mark already mentioned, Köln is where Eau de la Cologne, or in German, Kölnisch Wasser, meaning water from Cologne, originated. All these names would be simplified to just mean Cologne, and was originally mixed by an Italian perfume maker, Giovanni Maria Farina, in 1709. He named his fragrance in honour of his new hometown.
And Cologne has since become just a generic term for scented fragrances that use essential oils, extracts, alcohol, water. And Cologne was established as a territory by the Germanic tribes as early as the 1st century, but started to develop into a city as a Roman colony named Colonia Agrippina. Later, Colonia became the name of the city in its own right, which developed into the modern German as Köln. With Cologne, the French version of the city has also become standard in English as well.
For me, that was one thing that was a little bit confusing, like back in the day when I was learning about German teams, of like, there's an FC Köln, and then there's Köln, and then there's Cologne, and like, I'll be honest, I was a bit dumb. I was like, are these different teams? Are these the same teams? Are they from a different area or something? But yeah, so they're all basically mean, this lovely city. One fun aspect of Köln is the very popular Cologne Carnival that takes place every year, kicking off at 11 minutes past 11 on the 11th of the 11th month.
The carnival spirit is temporarily suspended during the Advent and Christmas period and picks up again after the 6th of January in the new year. And yeah, this street carnival is crazy. Everybody's dressing up and things like that. It does look like a fun party, doesn't it?
The street carnival really kicks into gear with like a week-long street festival called the Crazy Days. And it takes place between Fat Tuesday and Ash Wednesday. And the highlight of the carnival is Rose Monday, 2 days before Ash Wednesday. And all through these days, Cologne folks are just out dressed in like masquerade, kind of circus costumes. And basically everyone's just having a big piss up before Lent.
And the typical greeting during the festival is Kölne Alaf, a Cologne phrase which roughly translates to Cologne is the place to be, or Cologne above all else. And goes back to around 1550 when it was used as a toast and a cheer.
There have been continuously more than 1 million spectators on the streets of Rose Monday Parade every year, thus making the Cologne Carnival one of the largest street festivals in Europe. Some locals see the carnival season as its own separate fifth season of the year. So you have spring, carnival season, summer, autumn and winter. Hey, must be a long party, I guess.
Well, it fits with the mantra, which is go big or go home, with 75 floats and over 140 tons of candy floss. It sounds like pretty wild. I think we definitely need to take that one off at some point.
Köln is also twinned with like a hell of a lot of cities across the world, including Barcelona, Beijing, Bethlehem, Cork in Ireland, Kyoto, Istanbul, Lille, Liverpool, Neukölln, here in Berlin, strangely, just the area. So yeah, it's a hell of a lot of cities to be paired with. So I guess this carnival spirit is just, there's a lot of cities looking around, but yeah, we want a piece of that, maybe.
Yeah, so that's the home city, and moving to the home stadium of the club, Cologne called the Rhein Energy Stadion home. Previously, it was known as the Müngersdorfer Stadion up until 2001, but changed due to sponsorship reasons. And it's actually built on the site of the two previous stadiums as well, so they've always been on this one spot.
The stadium was one of five hosting both the 2005 FIFA Confederations Cup and in the 2006 FIFA World Cup, and hosted the 2020 Europa League final behind closed doors due to the Corona pandemic.
Yeah, and it's based in the east of the city and was opened originally in September 1923. And the first international match featured there was in November 1927, with Germany drawing 2-2 with the Netherlands. The stadium had a running track around the pitch and opened up the stadium to be used for more than just football.
It's been renovated on two occasions, firstly in 1974 with West Germany hosting the World Cup back then as well, and then Cologne wanting to be a host city. The city's bid was approved and it would soon begin on building a brand new stadium to replace the then outdated Müngersdorfer Stadion. The plans drawn up originally scouted out 80,000 seat arena, which was estimated to cost somewhere in the region of 23.5 million Deutschmarks.
And these plans started to spiral out of control, and in the end, it was estimated if the stadium had been completed, it would have cost around 93.5 million. So this clearly didn't happen. The city itself could only provide an extra 6 million in funding. So they didn't get their new stadium for the World Cup, but continued on with a sort of form of renovation. And in November 1975, a 61,000 seat arena was opened.
After the renovation in 1975, it was inaugurated with a match between Erster FC Köln and another local Köln-based team, SC Fortuna Köln, winning edging the game out 1-0 to open up the new stadium.
Once again, with another World Cup on the horizon, in 2003, the city reacted and started renovation of the stadium. This change, they removed the running track from around the pitch and moved the stands much closer. However, this did actually lower the overall attendance to 50,000. Of course, we all know Germany would be chosen to host the 2006 World Cup, and Cologne would host 5 games, 4 in the groups and 1 in the round of 16.
Portugal beat Angola 1-0, Ghana beat the Czech Republic 2-0, England and Sweden drew 2-2, Togo lost 2-0 to France in all the group stage, and then lastly, Ukraine slipped through on penalties against the Swiss in the round of 16.
Yeah, that England-Sweden game was the one with the Joe Cole wonder goal, wasn't it?
Thunderbolt.
Yeah, and it recently, as Joey mentioned, hosted the 2020 Europa League final behind closed doors. This was because the final was originally supposed to be in Gdansk, Poland, at the Stadion Energa, but had to be moved. And the game saw Sevilla, of course, of all people, to win the Europa League for the sixth time in a 3-2 win over Inter Milan.
So we move from the stadiums and the city to now we dive into those local rivals, those teams close to Cologne that they either love or hate in some regards.
Yeah, not a huge amount of love, I think, usually in this section in the podcast. So Cologne, the city, also contains FC Victoria Cologne and SC Fortuna Cologne, who currently play in the Dreiliga, the third division, and the Regionalliga, which is the fourth division, respectively. And Fortuna have only managed to climb into the Bundesliga on one occasion, mainly being a steady second-tier team for the majority of the 70s, 80s, 90s, before a collapse down the divisions came in the new millennium. Meanwhile, Victoria Cologne have only ever had one stint in the second tier during the late 70s, but in modern day, they've managed to actually climb ahead of Fortuna.
Despite the gaps between the teams, Cologne have faced off against Fortuna Cologne in pre-season friendlies in recent years, but back in 1983, the then second division side Fortuna would face off against FC Cologne in the DFB Pokal final. To give some credit to Fortuna, they beat a top division local rival who we're just about to speak about in Borussia Mönchengladbach in the quarterfinals too. Then follow that up with a 5-0 demolition of Borussia Dortmund to reach the final against FC Cologne.
The final would take place at the then called Müngersdorfer Stadion, perfect for both hometown crowds, but a relatively tame affair would play out in a classic final style that saw FC Cologne score the lone winning goal just after the hour mark to lift the Pokal.
We can't seem to find any notable or competitive fixtures between Cologne and Victoria, however, so as we like to do here, FC Cologne fans or Victoria Cologne fans, let us know if there have been a game in the past, a friendly, back in the past 70s, 80s maybe, let us know, because we'd love to hear about it.
That was the cross-city rivalries, but here we've got the neighbouring city rivalries, so Cologne versus Dusseldorf is a big city rivalry, and it's a fierce regional rivalry, which includes carnival parades, football and beer, so we're going against each other on all fronts here.
Both are located in the North Rhine-Westphalia state, and are seen to be different in ambience, architecture, attractions, and even people. In quotes here, it's hard to imagine such a mentality change over what is basically a 30-minute train ride.
Cologne was a Roman city, like we mentioned, and rose to prominence in the Middle Ages as a critical trade route. With its ties to Rome, the city also became an important hub for Catholicism. Dusseldorf, on the other hand, grew more organically from a small village where the Dussel and Rhine rivers meet to a chartered city in the 13th century.
In contrast to Cologne, Dusseldorf embraced a more secular society. Years later, Dusseldorf was named the capital of North Rhine-Westphalia over Köln. This is a little section taken from a Köln versus Düsseldorf article stating, "Ask any German, there are two carnivals to attend in Germany, Köln's and Düsseldorf's. Köln is the old Roman Mecca, including a stunning 18-year-old cathedral. Düsseldorf, on the other hand, is cleaner and polished. While Köln became a manufacturing town, Düsseldorf donned suits, and today the two cities rival each other in every aspect."
Yeah, so 1 in 5 people in Cologne work in manufacturing. Around 1/3 of all German television media is produced in this area. Cologne has a much more mellow vibe than its northern counterpart, with Dusseldorf being like a hub for finance, insurance, and just big conglomerates in the Rhine region.
However, it is stated that Cologne do have the edge of being the originator of the carnival season here in this part of Germany. Dusseldorf began to grow envious of Cologne's party mood, but it wasn't just that, it was also like economic reasons. Obviously, you have hundreds and thousands of tourists flocking into the city to drink beer, buy things and all that type of stuff. So the likes of Dusseldorf, Bonn and Aachen also tried to create their own carnivals to, you know, boost economic prospects.
Yeah, and residents of both cities refer to the other as the Forbidden City. For example, in Cologne, it's considered taboo to pronounce the word Dusseldorf. Sorry for saying it. I'll try not to anymore.
Perhaps the most consideration is, how do you like your beer, Mark?
Yeah, I've tried Kölsch, the beer in Cologne, and it's very good. Probably the closest you get to a British pale ale, but in very, very small glasses. It's very Moorish. It's very hard to stop, I think.
It's poured into thin little 0.2-litre cups and is designed for mass consumption. And I remember you telling me that it's like, you drink one and immediately it's filled up again. And you drink one, and it's filled up again, and it's very hard to stop.
When I was first, it took me a while to realise that if you don't want another one, you're supposed to put like a beer mat on top of the cup, and if you don't do that, it just means you want another one. So I was like the guy would encourage me, I drink it, and then I'm like, right, I can rest for a couple of minutes. Now, like, nope, bang, another one. So yes, if you do want a break, use the beer mat.
In Dusseldorf, they have their own competing beer, and it's called Altbier. Like Kolsch, it's top fermented, and it's a bit more of an old style, and it's darker, it's hoppier, and again, like its neighbour, it's consumed in tiny glasses and consumed by the dozen. So meanwhile, as we've already said, beer, carnivals, and now football.
Despite the cities having this deep rivalry, and the two teams seem to be doing their best to sort of avoid each other in recent years, like they're rarely playing in the same division. It's been Fortuna Düsseldorf who've been lagging behind Cologne in the lower tiers of German football, but as recently as the 18-19 season, Fortuna were promoted to the Erste Bundesliga, the top division, precisely as Cologne were relegated back to the second division. So yeah, only about 50 kilometres apart with the cities, but so far away in the football tables as they keep sort of swapping places and leagues and things like that.
The last time they faced off was in May of 2020. So you'll be thinking, yes, finally, these two teams meet, the fans, you know, they can get together, create this amazing atmosphere. No. It was, unfortunately, during the Bundesliga's post-COVID kind of return.
Was this the Bundesliga came back first, wasn't it? And then it was just everybody was watching the Bundesliga.
Everyone from England was picking up their second team from Germany. Yeah. But yeah, the Geisterspiel, as it would be known, the ghost game, ended in dramatic style with two goals at the death, levelling it up to make it 2-2.
Yeah, Düsseldorf would actually be leading 2-0 just past the hour mark, despite Cologne's Marc Uth missing a penalty. But with only 3 minutes left on the clock, an invited lofting ball was met by Anthony Modeste at the back of the post, who headed home comfortably.
And just as the clock ticked into added time, almost a carbon copy ball was thrown into the box, and this time it was John Cordoba that would rise highest and head past the Düsseldorf keeper. Considering Düsseldorf would finish 1 point short from the relegation playoff, that quickfire double from Modeste and Cordoba would be crucial in helping to relegate their rivals.
It's got to be sweet, hasn't it? The two teams have only faced off 49 times, with Cologne having the upper hand with 23 wins to Fortuna's 11, with 15 draws in there as well. Their most noteworthy games come in two DFB Pokal final showdowns in 78 and 80.
And now we move from Düsseldorf to another team we've already mentioned, with Borussia Mönchengladbach. Another team based in the North Rhine-Westphalia, only 50 kilometres away, so another close and fierce rivalry here.
In this part of Germany, I think if you're not familiar with the German cities on a map, if you look, like, all of these cities are literally just crammed next to each other. In the same part.
They were once compared to Batman and the Joker by the Rheinische Post newspaper. The idea being that the clubs are sworn enemies and yet somehow alter egos of each other.
And they faced each other 105 times in total, with Gladbach dominating the head-to-head with 54 wins to Cologne's just 31 and 20 draws. And although neither club has been able to compete for a Bundesliga title since the late 70s, the rivalry remains.
Delving into the origins of this rivalry is to delve into the very beginnings of FC Köln and Mönchengladbach in the newly formed Bundesliga, and is largely thanks to Hennes Weisweiler bringing success to both clubs, and often at the expense of the other team.
Yeah, the fixture is known as the Rhine Derby, and we'll make sure to come back and touch on some of the most important battles between these two clubs, as there's way too much to talk about at this stage. But yeah, there's Bundesliga title fights, Pokal final clashes, important figures sort of crossing the city, betraying each other. Like, yeah, it's all coming, so stay tuned for that.
Ozan Yurcan beratschlagen sich. Risse, Vollspann, drauf! In die Winkel! Was für Risse! Ist der verrückt? Wieder so ein Ding wie Pokal gegen Hoffenheim! Vollspann drauf und rein damit! Und rein damit! 2-1!
So after talking about the landscape of the city, we're going to jump into how the club was formed, the early beginnings of Erste FC Köln.
Two separate clubs were based in the city long before what we know as Köln today was formed. Clubs were called Kölner Ballspiel Club 1901, or Kölner BC, and Spielvereinigung 1907, Köln Süß.
Kölner BC was formed from a group of young men who were no longer happy as part of the gymnastics club of FC Borussia Köln and were far more interested in football. Meanwhile, Köln Süß was formed prior thanks to the merger of Sulzer Sportverein and Fußball Club, Hertha Sulz. So a lot of Herthas and Borussias and very like Germanic and Prussian names being thrown around here.
If you've got your German football club bingo card ready, you've got about six to tick off there. So yeah, there's a lot of clubs being merging into each other, and then yeah, there's these two separate clubs still running alongside each other, and both of them competed in the local regional league competition called the Western German Football Championship, which was founded in 1906. And this would run alongside seven other regional leagues, with the Southern German Football Championship being formed as early as 1898.
Separately, both teams would have little highlights or success, but BC Corner would take the Westdeutschen Championship in 1912.
World War One would put a halt to the league for 5 years, but then BC Corner would be runners-up 3 years on the spin after its resumption, and Kornsulz would win their lone West German Championship in 1928. Both these teams would qualify for the National Cup competition that sees the winners of each regional league compete in a knockout tournament to be crowned the best team in Germany.
But neither BC Corner nor Kornsulz would represent the Western League well. Corner in 1912 would be demolished 8-1 by Southern German champions Karlsruhe FV in the first round, and by 1928 the national competition had been expanded to include runners-up of regional leagues too. This saw Kornsulz drawn against Southern German runners-up Eintracht Frankfurt, and Kornsulz would win 3-1 in the opening round of 16, but then would be dumped out by Southern German winners Bayern Munich 5-2.
And by 1933, new regional leagues would be drawn up by the Nazi government that put both teams in the Gauliga Mittelrhein. And if you want to get a lot of detail on the Gauligas, if you go back to our Hamburg episode, because we covered that in depth there.
Kornsulz would participate in the very first 1933-34 season, but BC Corner would be absent from the list of founding teams. Throughout this period, there would be tons of chopping and changing as clubs would routinely be placed in one region, then into another, with numbers of teams in the leagues being a little bit inconsistent.
Yeah, the first Mittelrhein season had 11 clubs, one of which being Kornsulz. Following season would see the league lose a club and feature 10 clubs, but then Aachen from 1937 would join.
Despite this constantly changing league format, Kornsulz would record 3 third place finishes, and BC Corner would resurface for one lone season in 1937, finishing 10th in the Gauliga before disappearing again, all before Kornsulz laid claim to their first ever Gauliga title in the following 1938-39 season.
The outbreak of World War II saw more regional changes, with the leagues being carved up all around. As Nazi Germany expanded and expanded and took more parts of Europe, we would find different clubs actually then joining. So German-speaking areas of Belgium, Luxembourg added to the Gauliga, and
clubs would be added to leagues, and then they'd be split into two again, into different regions, so it was all getting very, very confusing. Kornsulz themselves would merge with another local team to create like a war sport union, just a short-term club to keep people active during the war, for the 1943-44 season, and they would actually win the Köln-Aachen Gauliga. So, some minor success despite all this chopping and changing.
Yeah, and that win would actually come on the eve of Nazi Germany's demise, and with the arrival of Allied forces in the region in late 1944, I think football was very much of a low priority. Cologne would find itself within the large British occupation post-war zone, but the city itself was garrisoned by Belgian soldiers specifically.
In the French occupation zone, football would resume as early as 1945, with the newly formed Oberliga Südwest replacing the Gauliga. Meanwhile, in the British zone, top-level football did not resume straight away, with the Gauligas being replaced by the Oberliga West in 1947.
Both Kölner BC and Kornsulz would be missing from the collection of clubs that featured in the first Oberliga West 1947-48 season, but both sport clubs would have a cunning idea to become more competitive once again.
The president of Kölner BC was Franz Krämer, who had the vision to recognise that Köln would never amount to anything on a national scale unless a more powerful club was built. They aimed to establish one premier club in the city, a side that would compete and contend for the highest honours. This is when, in the February of 1948, Kölner Ballspielclub and Spielvereinigung Kornsulz would merge and form what we know now as Erster FC Köln. The one, or the Erster prefix, was added to mean that this would be the one Köln-based football club to support and celebrate. Krämer was so confident of this merger being successful that he pitched it to Kornsulz then-president Karl Büttgen simply as, "Do you want to become German champions with me?"
Kramer, as we sort of read a bit more into him as we research, he becomes a huge figure in this club, and also with some incredible quotes as well. So like you said, do you want to become German champions with me? And there's a couple of other good ones as well. So yeah, with this merger, it happened in February 1948. Sulz members voted 121-35 in favour of the merger. Kölner BC voted in favour by 156-10, and thus FC Cologne, like you say, was officially founded in the Roggendorf pub in Sulz.
I wonder what the 45 people who voted against it when it did. Did they go and they just give up on football? Did they make another team that just didn't succeed and we've lost the history? But
ordered like 12 small beers each to drown their sorrows.
SC Köln was born with the ambition from the offset, with the idea of competing in the Oberliga straight away. Kramer brought in more professional management, which laid a solid foundation for Köln to kick on. Kramer expected the professionalisation of football in Germany to take place in the near future, and he aligned the club accordingly at this early stage.
Yeah, so you can see he's really looking into the future. You know, football isn't professional yet, but he's already basically putting this groundwork in, so as soon as it is, this club is ready to go. And he's described, as a lot of people when we've sort of been researching him, as an authoritarian, but also far-sighted, and he turned out to be one of the most significant people in the history of the club. And this is backed up by his nickname as Der Boss, the Boss. And yeah, he's still remembered very fondly today on what would have been his 100th birthday not that long ago. The club renamed the street that the stadium is on to Franz Kramer Allee, so the street is actually named after him, where the stadium is today.
Kramer has many great quotes relating to the club and is clearly a visionary beyond his time, stating, "Tradition only makes sense if there is a will to do even greater things." This was in response to the members of the other clubs concerning about losing their prior traditions at Kölner Sons and Kölner BC.
Which you can imagine in that meeting at the pub, some of the fans of the clubs that merged, maybe, I don't know, someone's like, "Yeah, but we don't want to lose our, I don't know, blue and white kit or something." He's like, "Look, this tradition doesn't matter if you're never going to have growth to actually achieve anything else." So, very bold.
He held office for 19 years until his death and is still undisputably the most important personality in the club's history. FC pulled themselves almost immediately into the Oberliga West ahead of the 1950-51 season. This division was made up of 16 teams and had developed into a competitive space, with recognisable names from today like Borussia Dortmund and Schalke leading the way. But teams like Rot-Weiß Essen, STV Horst Emscher and Rot-Weiß Oberhausen competing for the title in the opening season too. BVB were the kings of this new division at this point, winning two league titles on the bounce. So there's a mark on their BVB's back right away for FC Köln to chase down.
Moving from Kramer, we'll move to another key personality in the club, which is Hennes Weisweiler. And this is where we feel it's best to introduce a man that will sort of bounce back into Cologne throughout this story. Weisweiler was born in Lechenich, which was less than an hour's drive south from Cologne, and would feature in the first ever lineup after FC Cologne formed, with his role being player coach.
The reason we introduce Hennes the coach first is because exactly 2 years after the founding of FC Cologne, local circus directors presented the club with a young Billy Goat at the carnival meeting, stating that FC Köln still lacked some form of a lucky charm or a mascot.
Yeah, the gift was accepted and the animal was christened Hennes after the player coach Hennes Weisweiler. And within a few years, the Billy Goat, which was always present at the club's home games, became a permanent object of identification for the club. The nickname Die Geißbocher, or the Billy Goats in English, stuck, and the Billy Goat was eventually added into the club's crest in full view in the modern day.
Now, with the average lifespan of a goat being just 8 to 12 years, we currently get to see the 9th edition of Hennes. And simply, if, well, the Billy Goat or a Billy Goat dies, a new one is selected. But in recent years, it's become more normal for the goats to retire in old age, with a younger one being selected as its successor.
It's amazing. So we're currently on, what, Hennes the 9th? Amazing. The death of Hennes the 2nd in 1970, it suddenly feels like it's like the crown or something but for goats. The death of Hennes the 2nd in 1970 caused a sensation, with him being found motionless one morning, with the cause of death being attributed to a German shepherd dog that entered the enclosure. Rumours of foul play or even murder began to circulate amongst Cologne fan circles and persist to this very day, with the idea that Borussia Mönchengladbach fans poisoned the poor goat being one of the popular rumours, which, like, in England, and we talk about big football rivalries like Millwall, always violent. Imagine, like, here there's rumours that the other fans poisoned your goat. Like, it's crazy.
To describe it as a wonderful story when it involves the death of a goat is a bit weird.
Yeah, sorry, let me forget. When I say I love it, I don't love that the goat died in suspicious circumstances. Just the idea of having a goat, an actual live goat.
In classic boring red tape UEFA style, Hennes would be banned from being close to the players' bench in the 2017 campaign during the Europa League ties, where FC Köln participated. In a bid to get round this, as a joke, Köln requested a playing permit for Hennes, as the team were suffering an injury crisis at the time and lacked players to fill out the bench.
Since August 2014, he's been housed in a special enclosure at Cologne Zoo, decorated with Cologne badges and scarves and things where fans can come visit him. Inside is Hennes Cam, which allows supporters to keep up with the day-to-day life of the club's most famous devotee, which... I also love this of, like, you know, like some fans, I don't know, diehard going to watch the club train or something. Imagine, like, each day, like, going to visit the club's goat just to check on him or to make sure there's no Mönchengladbach fans around. Like,
permanent security all the time now. From that second, they were like, it happened to Hennes the second, it's never happening again.
It's not happening to Hennes the third.
Yeah. And even in the very present day, Hennes' involvement is crucial, so much so that ahead of the Cologne's trip to the US while the Qatar World Cup is on, the club have put out a plea for a replacement Hennes, as unfortunately the current Hennes won't be able to make it through customs. So with the help of Bundesliga commentator and personal favourite from us here at the Journeyman, Derek Ray has gone out of his way to ask if anyone in Texas has a goat that FC Köln can use.
A stand-in Hennes. Imagine, like, being this American goat who's just living his life on a farm and all of a sudden he's being selected as the American Hennes. What a life he could have.
Should it be, like, not Hennes, should it be, like, Henry? Like, hello there.
It should be, like, Hank.
Hank the goat. Hank. Hennes' American cousin.
It's like on the old Top Gear, you know, it's like, the Stig's American cousin. Stuff like that.
But anyway, and now away from Hennes, back to the origins of Köln. Köln didn't waste any time in their first Oberliga season, finishing a respectable fifth place. They did miss out on qualification for the national championships on goal difference, though.
In the following season, they'd go one better with a fourth place finish, only missing the top spot by 4 points in a tightly contested season that saw Dortmund's arch-rival Schalke break their dominance of the Oberliga West.
The following 51-52 season would see a different winner, with Rot-Weiss Essen claiming the top spot, with Köln in fifth once again, a little further off the pace this time with a 12-point gap to the top. And come the end of the season, Hennes Weisweiler would leave his player-manager role to focus solely on a head coaching role.
Cologne would rally themselves ahead of the 52-53 season, and it would also see rivals Borussia Mönchengladbach climb into the Oberliga West for the first time. Cologne wouldn't get distracted by Mönchengladbach's relegation scrap, as at the other end of the table, they were competing in their first full-blooded Oberliga title-chasing season.
They would set an Oberliga record, winning their first 11 games on the spin. Köln would have the league's top scorer amongst their ranks as an outside left. Hans Schäfer would score 25 goals across the season.
And Hans Schäfer is another one of our key people we'll introduce at this point. And an outside left or left winger, later a playmaker. And he played 356 games for his club in the West German Oberliga between 1949 and 1963. And he was the record goal scorer in what was then the highest division in West German football, with 223 goals, and also took part in 3 World Cups and was voted Germany's Footballer of the Year in 1963.
Years later, he reported about how important Weisweiler had been in his development, stating, "Without Hennes, I would never have become a world champion." Simple as that.
Do we definitely know he was talking about Weisweiler there, or was he talking about the goat? But after his career, he devoted himself entirely to work as a sole representative of a promotion and advertising company that had originally been founded by the club president and sponsor, Franz Kramer. So it's weird how some things suddenly go full circle. But back to the story.
Thanks to Hans Schäfer's goals, Köln would find themselves just 3 points behind eventual Oberliga winners Borussia Dortmund. A bittersweet pill to swallow, surely.
But not to be disheartened by the close run, Köln would go one better in the following season. Again, they'd be part of a fierce race for the title with a three-way battle for top spot. Only 2 points would separate Köln, Rot-Weiss Essen and Schalke, as Köln pipped both of them to the line to claim their first Oberliga title, their first piece of silverware for the trophy cabinet.
Hans Schäfer would once again produce the goods to finish as the league's top scorer, once again with 26 goals this time. That's 51 goals in 60 league games across the two seasons, in which we don't even know if he played every game.
Absolute animal.
He would obviously help Köln's goal difference, as that was the main standout point looking at the final league table. FC nearly doubled second place Rot-Weiss Essen's plus 26, getting plus 40, with the highest number of goals scored in League 2, 86 to be specific.
Despite the competitiveness of the Oberliga West, in the post-war era, only one Western team had ever made a national final, let alone winning one. And Köln would continue with these struggles. They flattered to deceive, missing out on the final in the three-way group qualification that saw Kaiserslautern go through and lose 5-1 to Hannover 96.
The following season would see Hennes Weisweiler return to FC Köln as just the head coach this time, but it would be a bump back down to reality as FC fell from their top spot to 8th in the table, and Rot-Weiss Essen claimed their second Oberliga title. They'd even shown up Köln in the national championships, winning the final against Kaiserslautern 4-3 and bringing the first national title to the Oberliga West, something we're sure Köln's ambitious owners and team would have wanted to achieve themselves.
Yeah, and it would take Köln a season to rebound, as the 55-56 season would see them only improve by one position to 7th place. But slowly but surely, Köln began to rise again as momentum began to build. And they'd improve again in the following season, missing out on the national championship thanks to their head-to-head record against Duisburger, who finished 2nd, pushing Köln to 3rd, still only 2 points behind Borussia Dortmund in 1st place. And they'd finally get another crack in the national championships, agonisingly finishing 2nd in the league, only 1 point behind Schalke this time. In the Oberliga, it feels as if they'd be edging closer and closer to another title, but again, floundered on the national stage.
They narrowly navigated a qualification round in which they were taken to a replay by Kaiserslautern. After drawing 3-3 in the initial tie, they would win more comfortably 3-0 to secure a spot in the group stage of the national championship. Remarkably, they'd finish bottom of the group that contained HSV, FC Nürnberg and FK Permessens, collecting just a single point for their troubles.
The close league finish and national championship disappointment took its toll on Hennes Weisweiler as he decided to leave for city neighbours Victoria Cologne. And despite being dumped out of the national competition so convincingly and their hometown manager leaving for a local rival, you'd expect Cologne ahead of the 58-59 season to take confidence from their previous second place finish and hopefully get themselves over the line with an Oberliga title, but no, it wasn't to be.
They'd be denied once again, not from BVB or Schalke this time, not even Duisburger SV or Rot-Weiss Essen like some of the teams we've already mentioned. It would be a name that we certainly didn't recognise in Westfalia Herne. They'd come from a lowly 12th place finish the year before to then winning the Oberliga, 6 points clear of FC Köln.
But success would finally return to Köln in the following season, as they wouldn't be denied a third season straight. Now we're in the 59-60 season and they finished 7 points clear of the rising team Westfalia Herne to win the Oberliga title for the second time with a mighty plus 46 goal difference. Köln would press on the national stage again to make it to the final before losing to Hamburg 3-2. Again, marks of definite improvement.
In einem Feuerwerk der Fußballkunst wurde das deutsche Finale zwischen dem HSV und dem 1. FC Köln. Frankfurt erlebte eine Sommerinvasion. Zehntausende von Fußballanhängern strömten ins Waldstadion zu dem großen Familienfest. Und Hein und Fietje von der Waterkant beseelte die gleiche Begeisterung wie ihre Freunde Tünnes und Schäl vom Rhein.
88. Minute, Dörfel hebt einen Freistoß, geschickt über die Kölner Abwehr und Uwe Seeler tritt nach.
Zu 2 für Hamburg. Was dann folgt, kann nur begreifen, wer mit dem Fußball verheiratet ist.
This loss in the final to Hamburg did have one upside of qualifying FC Köln for the Intercity Fairs Cup. This wasn't the first time that a lot of these Köln players had featured in Europe, however, as in prior seasons of the Intercity Fairs Cup, many of the players had featured as a part of a city-wide Cologne 11. Cologne wasn't the only city to feature like a City 11, with teams from London, Copenhagen, Belgrade, Leipzig, and many other major European cities competing in the early iteration of the Fairs Cup. Talking about how much we enjoyed the Anglo-Italian Cup and wanting to revive that in our Blackpool episode, our first episode, the idea of like a tournament based around like the cities, so not Chelsea and Arsenal, we literally mean London, would be fantastic. You could base it on who plays for the clubs in the city or who actually is local to that city. For example, like a Paris 11 with like N'Golo Kante, Kylian Mbappe, Kingsley Coman immediately is like probably pretty good. London as well, Jadon Sancho, Declan Rice, as I put down here, Bakayo Saka. It would be a very cool like pre-season tournament. Like, not too, it doesn't have to be too like competitive, but just an interesting like
It's similar to the thing that Todd Bowley was on about, wasn't he, when he said about like the south versus the north thing. But I think this would be better if it actually, like you say, it would be London clubs players versus like, but I think it would be better if it was like players that were born in Yorkshire or northern team or a Yorkshire FC with like Stones and Walker or something like that.
Yeah, Barcelona, I mean a Barcelona 11 would probably be pretty good. Madrid 11 would be pretty good as well. Most of the capital cities you'd imagine would be pretty good.
Yeah.
Berlin, admittedly.
Rudiger. Boatengs.
They're both Boatengs. Might have to keep quiet on that one, Berlin. Might have to keep out of that one. But yeah, London, Paris. But you get the idea.
I feel a custom football manager database coming on.
Back to Köln. Köln's 11, back in the day in the Intercity Fairs Cup, made it to the quarterfinals of the 1960-61 edition before being beaten by Roma. But the following year, Erste FC Köln earned the right to represent the city and made its first appearance as FC Köln in Europe.
They certainly didn't disappoint the neutral, with their first game being a 4-4 draw versus Inter Milan over two legs. Cologne won 4-2 at the Müngersdorfer Stadion before losing 2-0 at the San Siro, with away goals not being a decider yet. A third playoff game was scheduled at the San Siro 14 days later, which saw an absolute battle of a game take place, ending 5-3 to Inter.
Technically, it would be 9-7 on aggregate. Spectacular. 9-7. The Nerazzurri ran out 4-0 lead before Köln's Anton Rey netted twice. Thumberto would get his third of the night to make it 5-2, with Karl-Heinz Ripkens getting the last goal of the tie with 15 minutes to go. Köln were knocked out, but facing Inter Milan was a tough draw. We're sure they would have attracted the admiration of a fair few neutrals with these goal-scoring performances at the home of the Nerazzurri at the San Siro.
But back to the Oberliga, and remarkably, FC Cologne wouldn't just make it back-to-back titles, but actually would add their third, so winning domineering fashion. The third league title would prove to be extra sweet as they achieved something they hadn't managed before. They would win the 1962 German National Championship, getting through the qualifying group stage for the final ahead of Eintracht Frankfurt, Hamburg and FK Pirmasens. They would face FC Nuremberg in the final and thump them 4-0.
And thus winning the National Championship led their pathway to the European Cup, so back in the European stage. Thanks to the demolition of Nuremberg, Köln will be drawn to face Scottish opposition Dundee in the first round. And once again, they would impress the neutral, being part of a tie that featured 13 goals.
Absolutely outrageous. This time around, it wouldn't look quite as good as they travelled to Dens Park and lost 8-1 in the first leg. And regardless of their 4-0 win back on home turf, you can't really escape how the result in your first game at this level must have felt for the players and fans.
Dundee would make it all the way to the semi-finals before losing to AC Milan, who won the entire thing. So maybe Köln fans can take a little bit of solace from that. But then coming back to the domestic front, Dortmund and Schalke would take cracks at breaking Köln's four-year monopoly at the top of the Oberliga. But Köln would time their domination perfectly as calls for a nationwide league system had begun to grow over the years.
Yeah, Franz Kramer had been one of the most energetic advocates of the introduction of this new league since the formation of the club.
Wir haben natürlich ein Neuland zu beschreiten. Wir wissen alle noch nicht, was vor uns liegt. Ich hoffe aber, dass durch die Bildung der Spitzenklasse, durch die Konzentration der Spitzenkräfte, die Bundesliga das bringen wird, was wir uns so lange in Deutschland.
The Oberliga system had been in place for 16 years, with FC Cologne featuring the top five of the West League in all but two seasons, being runner-up three times and winning the league five times. Plans for the Bundesliga were then announced, with guidelines for qualifying being very complex. And based on your previous successes and league placement of the last 10 Oberliga seasons, you'd be awarded points.
So, in classic German style, let's make this overly complex, in that whereby results from the 1952-55 campaign, they were a one times multiplier on the points you would be given. Then between 55 and 59, they would be doubled. And then between 59 and 63, they would be tripled. So as a first place finish, you'd be awarded 16 points. And 16th place, you'd be awarded 1 point, with various points being given for the DFB Pokal successes or national championship successes, meaning Köln racked up a perfect run of maximum points with their four league title wins in a row, and it would be tripled in value too. So, very Germanic this, very complicated, but hey, Köln have smashed it. So, yeah, they couldn't have timed it better. They could not have timed it better.
Absolute perfect timing. So they would actually net themselves 466 points and qualify as the highest scoring team in the Oberliga West, ahead of Dortmund on 440 and Schalke on 396. Cologne's 466 would actually be the third highest total qualification points behind Hamburg's 518. Remember, we actually talked about in episode 2, they won all but one Oberliga Nord title, so Cologne really shouldn't be downhearted like Hamburg were really maxing it out.
We're going to give a little precursor context to the rivalry with Borussia Mönchengladbach, as this is where the fires start to develop between the two clubs. Prior to the Bundesliga's first season, Köln continued to think and act beyond their Oberliga West boundaries, thinking more internationally as Franz Kramer set out to do. This began to become the norm throughout the German game in those pre-kind of Bundesliga days.
By the point just before this happened, everybody knew it was going to happen somewhere. Like, there'd been a a football league in England for so long, in Italy, so people knew it was coming but didn't know when, so been trying to prepare for it. And this led to Cologne establishing early rivalries with teams that, which competed with them for the Oberliga West title, the national championship, such as Borussia Dortmund, rather than local rivalries like Gladbach. Gladbach just didn't matter in this regard, as they'd finished in the top half of the Oberliga West just one time.
From a Gladbach perspective, they didn't really care either, as for a while they crossed swords with a truly local rival, Reitner Spielverein, which is a very local borough of Mönchengladbach. And while the local club now plays at the lowest rung of the amateur game, they used to be quite good. In the 1953-54 season, they were coached by the man from Köln we've mentioned, Hennes Weisweiler. This was after his stint as player-coach at FC Köln, and with him leading Reitner Spielverein, managing to pull themselves all the way up to compete with FC Köln and Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Oberliga West on three separate occasions. So really doing a road to glory kind of thing with Reitner Spielverein here.
I love how he's just always in this same area, but then just picks a club up and takes them to the next level. He seems, yeah, clearly a visionary of the day. But moving forward into the 63-64 season, so regardless of Mönchengladbach's averageness, FC Köln continued on from being a dominating force in the Oberliga West and translated that into the Bundesliga's first ever season.
The team was strengthened by the likes of Wolfgang Overath and Wolfgang Weber joining, with both going on to have a significant stints at Köln and even becoming mainstays of the German national team. There would be a change in the dugout as George Knopfl jumped into the FC Köln Hoftseat. Franz Kramer must have looked like a genius with his calls for the full national division, as FC Köln steamrolled the new division, only losing on two occasions all season, sat at the top of the division for all but one game week, and scored in every game throughout the season.
This project he's been working on, waiting in the wings, waiting for this national league, has clearly paid off, and everything he's been doing behind the scenes and what they've been doing with the players, it's fantastic.
They finished on a total of 45 points, 6 points clears of Meidericher SV, or MSV Duisburg nowadays. Strangely, one of the two losses Köln faced all season was a 3-1 loss at home to Saarbrücken, who finished the season dead last with only 17 points. So, just like in FM, you're on a roll, and then the bottom team's leading striker, who hasn't scored all season, nets his first goal of the season, and maybe even a hat-trick against you. It's just classic.
And a rather familiar name for the podcast in Uwe Zieler would be top goal scorer for the inaugural Bundesliga season, scoring 30 goals. Once again, check out the Hamburg episode for more information on him and his massive foot.
However, FC Köln didn't have to rely on one lone big foot from Uwe Zieler. They had a joint venture with Karl-Heinz Thielen and Christian Müller, netting 31 goals between them. Both Hanstrom and Hans Schäfer got goals from midfield with 13 and 12 respectively. I mean, who doesn't love a goal-scoring midfielder? You, Mark, Frank Lampard lover.
Legend.
Even three of the five defenders in the squad got on the score sheet in this league-winning season, so they really spread the goals around this FC team.
Yeah, goals absolutely everywhere. And they'd also compete once again in the Intercities Fair Cup, and with much more success beating Ghent, Sheffield Wednesday and AS Roma, before being knocked out by Valencia, losing 4-3 over two legs, with the damage being done with a 4-1 defeat in Spain. But again, we're seeing these steady building blocks of progression, playing more against other European teams, like big clubs like Roma and Valencia. So getting that...
And Sheffield Wednesday.
And Sheffield Wednesday. I have no allegiance to Sheffield United, I'm sorry. So we're seeing this progression and building as a team in these very early days.
We mentioned about him before, but he was such a pioneering successor part of this season. We have to talk about him some more. It was Hans Schäfer specifically, had been the exact opposite of a journeyman up to this point of his career, playing for no one else other than FC Köln in his professional career, signing with the club as they founded and helped Köln climb into the Oberliga with 19 goals. He was described as a quick-footed, powerful, enthusiastic, tricky and hard-shooting striker on the left wing, and would be present through Köln's dominant Oberliga period and into their first Bundesliga season, as we've just heard now.
With this sort of solid base, he would then be called up to the West German national team and be part of a triumphant campaign, winning the 1954 World Cup in Switzerland and scoring 4 goals in the tournament. He even set up the winning goal as Schäfer pressured the Hungarian halfback on the ball, whipping the cross to a head that would be blocked, but the rebound would be tucked home. The international press hailed him as the best left winger in the world after his World Cup performance, but the fame or pressure wouldn't derail his performances as he continued to produce the goods in Cologne.
By the time he'd compete in the Bundesliga, Hans was 35 years of age, and whilst being successful in the latter stages of his career, he'd go out in style, playing in the first two seasons of the newly founded Bundesliga, playing 39 matches, netting 20 goals before retiring from professional football with a 1-in-2 ratio. This took him well clear as FC Köln's leading all-time scorer with a fine total of 304 goals.
Yeah, he played his last game in May 1965 in a 2-2 away draw with Borussia Dortmund and would get on the score sheet in a fitting tribute to an outstanding career.
But back in Köln, as the second Bundesliga season was building up, the Köln team, as defending champions, were also favourites to win the championship once again. But a poor start to the season would put them on the back foot. FC would steadily improve to their best and even top the table in game week 16. But come the end of the season, it would be Werder Bremen taking the Bundesliga title to Northern Germany as Köln fell 3 points short in second place. So that poor start really shooting themselves in the foot, unfortunately.
And curiously, Köln actually claimed an interesting first during this campaign, as they'd be the first team to feature a Brazilian player, with Zeze featuring against Hertha Berlin. He'd been signed for then a club record of 150,000 Deutschmarks, and Franz Kramer actually brought him to Germany on the mere recommendation of one of the player's agents, and without actually ever even seeing him play once. And when the first reports of interest in Cologne were published in the local newspapers, it was this sort of secret deal that Cologne were trying to sign a Brazilian, and it was speculated that they were trying to sign Pelé. So of course, when another Brazilian got off the plane, there was some serious disappointment.
Fusion at the very least. But he did impress in the club's warm-up matches before the start of the season, raising hopes he would become this miracle forward, maybe be the new Pelé. But unfortunately, things didn't really click in Germany. I'd imagine culturally between Germany and Brazil, there would be some differences, as Zizi found it difficult to cope with the German winter and was, funnily enough, diagnosed by a Spanish doctor with having a snow allergy. He'd leave Köln, only making 5 appearances, and the Brazilian returning back to his homeland.
As German champions, Köln entered the 1964-65 European Cup, and it was their last attempt at surviving the first round, beating Albanian team FK Partizani 2-0. They travelled to Athens to face Panathinaikos in the next round, drawing 1-1 away, and were forced to come from behind at home as the visitors went ahead just after 6 minutes. Goals from the mighty duo Karl-Heinz Thielen and Christian Müller got Köln through to the quarterfinals.
This is where it was just in time to meet England's Liverpool Football Club. After 2-0 draws, in which the second leg at Anfield is stated that FC keeper Tony Schumacher repelled Liverpool's constant attack for over 90 minutes with some, I'm imagining, some rear guard action here. A third tiebreaker game was played at a neutral venue, with Feyenoord's De Kuip being chosen to decide this quarterfinal clash. The stage was set, with Köln once again predicted to be the underdogs, but they fought bravely. So much so that Wolfgang Weber broke his fibula, the thinner bone in your shin, after 20 minutes, but continued to play after just some brief treatment. Ouch.
Liverpool would score twice, but Heinz Thielen would grab one before half-time, with Hannes Lühr levelling the tie at the break, with the game not even finding a winner in extra time. And the penalty shootout had not yet been introduced as a means of deciding a tie, and UEFA's rules at the time stipulated that Cologne's fate in the European Cup decided by a coin toss.
Ironically enough, after 300 minutes of football, even the coin didn't want to decide who went to the semis, as the first toss saw the coin get stuck vertically in the ground amongst the grass. The second toss was flipped and saw Liverpool progress, unfortunately for FC Köln, as this unlucky fate has been then nicknamed the coin toss of Rotterdam.
I mean, just imagining, like, going to VAR and looking at, like, the rotation of the coin in slow motion from, like, 6 different angles, and, like, it's, yes, it's stuck in the ground, but maybe, like, heads is slightly further.
Check,
like,
the monitor!
We've got a 63-degree angle here on tails. Like.
Liverpool will be dumped out by a familiar team for Köln in Inter Milan, who'd go on to win the whole thing once again. And maybe, yeah, again, Köln fans can take relief in that. And once again, it's more improvement on the continental stage. Winning their first Bundesliga title, competing for the Bundesliga, and again, step by step, climbing up the rungs of the continental stage.
Despite the blistering start to the Bundesliga era, Cologne fans would have to wait 3 years for some more silverware, as Cologne powered their way to the DFB Pokal final, which is in 67-68.
However, this season would be severely disrupted, as in the November of 1967, the talismanic club president Franz Kramer would suddenly pass away. The club he had pioneered into existing had just been beaten by Eintracht Frankfurt hours before his death. He'd been the president of Kölner BHC, then almost single-handedly created the idea of a city-wide Köln football club with a winning culture and a forward-thinking model of existence out of his own force of will, pretty much. He was the leading figure for this club, and when you think of similar examples of clubs losing a talismanic figure like Fergie at United or Aberdeen, as we've spoken about, Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, for example, or Bobby Robson at Ipswich, looking back last episode, sometimes it's just never quite the same ever again without these right people in the right environment at the right time. It's just irreplaceable sometimes.
Yeah, it's so hard to replace. And especially, like you said, this guy has been the driving vision behind all of this and setting this club up for the success that's then... It wasn't just like he made these big claims and those quotes that we spoke about and then nothing happened. He said those things, said, do you want to become a champion with me? And then they've gone and done it all. It's interesting to see now, where does the club go from there? Like you say, it can take years to get back that momentum and losing someone so visionary like that.
You've got to imagine behind the scenes, he must have been setting those standards like every day. As Bobby Robson, as we talked about with Bobby Robson at Ipswich Town last episode, he'd talk about coming into Ipswich Town, setting the standards, making sure everyone was feeling good, feeling like they need to do their job for the team, for him. And so I can imagine Franz Kramer was doing the exact same here at, behind the scenes at FC Köln. And it's just important. He is probably the most important figure to the history and success of FC Köln. A small stadium was already being built beside Köln's clubhouse, funny enough, called Die Gleisbockenheim, or the Billy Goat Home. And the stadium was completed in 1971 and was named the Franz Kramer Stadion. So he has the street beside the stadium, his own mini stadium by the clubhouse, and it's where the Köln's B team play their home matches in the Regional Liga West today.
During the season, FC Köln continued to battle at the top end of the Bundesliga, sitting atop the table for periods of the season as Hannes Löhr racked up 27 goals to be the top goal scorer. But it wouldn't be enough as FC finished fourth, 9 points behind FC Nuremberg. They competed in the Intercity Fairs Cup, beating Slavia Prague in the first round before losing to Rangers 4-3 in the second round. It would be the DFB Pokal where FC would find success this season as they dispatched FC Homburg, not Hamburg, but FC Homburg Czar, who currently play in the Regionalliga Südwest in the first round.
The Billy Goats needed replays to squeeze past Eintracht Frankfurt and then Eintracht Braunschweig, but after those grueling ties, they were rewarded with a semi-final against Borussia Dortmund. Now, at this point, Köln and Dortmund have continued their competitive rivalry from the Oberliga days, with both being in and around the top of the Bundesliga, so this would have been continued to be a derby, heated affair.
FC wouldn't need extra time as they ran out comfortable 3-0 winners with goals from Hans Thielen and Hannes Löhr, booking their place in the final. It would just be their third appearance in the Pokal final, with their opponent being VfL Bochum. The Südweststadion in Ludwigshafen, a city over the river from Mannheim, would host the occasion in front of a packed 60,000 crowd.
Bochum had overcome, firstly, the qualification round, playing an extra four matches before Köln had even played any in the cup competition. And secondly, VfL had beaten the rising juggernaut of Bayern Munich in the semis. So Köln had come into this final as favourites, but Bochum had more than earned their right to compete at this stage of the cup.
Köln would be handed the lead thanks to a Werner Jablonski own goal after 22 minutes. Karl-Heinz Boccia would equalise in ruthless fashion, and Karl-Heinz Ruhl, the man on the right of Köln's attacking 4-3-3, would put the Billy Goats back ahead just a minute later.
He doubled Köln's advantage just before the hour mark, before who else but Hannes Löhr put the game beyond all doubt, make it 4-1 with 20 minutes to go. Captain Karl-Heinz Thielen would lift FC's first DFB Pokal trophy aloft in what would surely be a fitting tribute to Franz Kramer.
The success allowed FC to play in the European Cup Winners' Cup, which saw them beat French side Bordeaux 4-2, Dutch side Den Haag 4-0, and Danish side Randers 5-1 before being paired up against Catalan giants Barcelona. Impressively how they've dispatched those other teams with plenty of goals, but coming up against Barcelona is surely going to be the real test.
At home, FC managed to contain the Blaugrana to a 2-2 draw, but back in Barca, it was a completely different story. Josep Fustra scored a hat-trick to comfortably send the Catalan side to the final, with it being 6-3 on aggregate. They would lose the final to then Czechoslovakian side Slovan Bratislava 3-2 in Basel, however.
On the domestic front, FC Köln's success would start to lose some of its shine. As defending champions, they were dumped out of the Pokal by Stuttgart, and in the league they'd be involved in something they'd never been experienced with before.
Köln's form away from home would be dreadful, losing 13 of 17 games. Only thanks to their home form, it wasn't a complete disaster of a campaign, as FC were dragged into a tightly contested relegation battle, in which they had to fight until the last match of the season to stay in the division.
On the 34th match day, it came down to a duel with previous year's champions FC Nuremberg, in which only a win would guarantee the Billy Goats safety. Köln's players would stand up when it really counted, as Wolfgang Overath scored shortly after half-time to make it 1-0. Then Ruhl and Hoenig increased the score to 3-0, and FC Köln stayed in the league at the expense of Nuremberg.
The final table would see Köln finish 13th, which, to make you think, well, what was all the fuss about? But this league must have been the most competitive season between teams we've ever seen, I think. Köln finished with a total of 32 points. This was only 3 points clear of 17th place Nuremberg, but only 6 points away from Amelia Aachen in second place. Only 9 points separated second place from relegation. as Bayern Munich comparatively ran off with the title on 46 points. Bayern were led by a manager we spoke about in episode 2, talking about Hamburg, with Yugoslavian disciplinarian Branko Zabek leading the way for Bayern Munich's title charge.
It is a completely bonkers season just looking at the table. But also what's really interesting in this is Nuremberg, who won the league the season before, and Cologne, who've been challenging with them, are both involved in this relegation battle as well. It's just completely crazy.
Dortmund are down there too as well. So Köln and Dortmund have been competing at the right end of the table. Dortmund finished 16th.
You even look at like Kickers Offenbach, who finished bottom of the league. They still won 10 games that season. Won 10 games, drew 8, but then, yeah, losing 16. But, yeah, a completely crazy season where it seems like nobody, obviously Bayern with a few bit more extra points, but nobody seemed to be really head and shoulders completely above everybody else. It was a very similar across the board, a strange season.
So with that close call with relegation, we move into the 1969-70 season and the return of Hennes Weisweiler. After FC's Cols shave with relegation, attacker Bernd Rupp would join the club and hit the ground running. Thankfully, this season, Köln would concentrate on the top end of the table, but would lose the important matches to Bayern Munich, and oh no, who's that coming over the hill behind Köln? It would be those nothing local rivals, Borussia Mönchengladbach, that for years Köln had never had to think about competitively. However, Mönchengladbach would have a very familiar face in the dugout. None other than local man, the name, inspiration of Köln's goat mascot, Hennes Weisweiler.
At this point, Hennes had spent 4 years at Victoria Cologne after leaving FC. Meanwhile, Borussia Mönchengladbach had been left behind by not qualifying for the first season of the newly formed Bundesliga. In the Rhineland, Hennes was regarded as a major figure in the coaching scene, so to bring him to Gladbach was seen as like a major coup. Vice President Helmut Grashoff described Hennes as a coach who could bring about the full development of hope. Weisweiler then came to Mönchengladbach at the end of the 63-64 season, managing the last 2 games of that campaign. He set about transforming the club as he instructed his scouts to sort after young, up-and-coming, unknown talent.
And funny enough, one of the first signings Hennes made for Gladbach was Bernd Rupp from SV Wiesbaden. He also successfully promoted 19-year-old striker Jupp Heynckes from the club's reserve team too. As Köln fought for the Bundesliga above, Hennes was building a new force below as Gladbach won the 1964-65 Regional League of West and was promoted to the top tier. Weisweiler would continue to promote what had set in motion this success by promoting more young talents capable of development, and it would just about work as they finished 7 points clear of the drop in the 13th place.
In their second season, Hennes focused on tightening up at the back and things really started to click. They would finish only one place behind Cologne, and we hadn't mentioned it as we wanted to save it for this reveal, but Mönchengladbach would finish above Cologne for the first time in the 67-68 season and again in the following season as Cologne panicked about relegation.
The man born an hour away from Köln had created a young and hungry goal-scoring machine at Borussia, which had started to rival FC continually in the hunt for trophies and success. This is where we start to see the early stages of this heated local rivalry develop.
Yeah, so as we enter the early 1970s, in the 69-70 season, Cologne would be in contention for the title until losing to both Bayern Munich and Hennes' Mönchengladbach. It would derail FC's hopes, but would catapult Gladbach into the driving seat in which they drove off into the sunset with their first ever Bundesliga title.
Fun fact, FC would set a record that still stands to this day during this unsavoury season, being part of a game that had the highest attendance in Bundesliga history. The record was set at the Olympiastadion, not too far away from us as we record this pod, as Hertha Berlin played host to Köln in front of 88,075 people on match day 6.
The Billy Goats would get some form of revenge as they dumped Mönchengladbach out of the quarters of the DFB Pokal and then beat Aachen 4-0 in the semis before facing off against second division side Kickers Offenbach in the final.
FC would come into this as clear favourites, with an opportunity to save some face from what was a lacklustre ending to the league campaign. But what played out at the Niedersachsenstadion in Hanover would be anything but easy viewing for Köln fans, as the underdog held their own and commanded a 2-0 lead up until the hour mark.
Hannes Löhr would once again stand up and be counted to half the deficit in the 64th minute, and tragically late into the game, Werner Biskup had the opportunity to level the game from the penalties but would miss. Offenbach would hold on and lay claim to their first ever DFB Pokal, in which Offenbach's cup victory over Köln is widely considered to be one of the greatest cup upsets in Germany ever.
As we tick over into the 70s, this is when the hatred between Köln and Gladbach really starts to heat up, as both routinely got in the other team's way when competing for silverware, plus the sheer proximity of the neighbouring teams is bound to cause problems. As when FC Köln was formed with Franz Kramer's sheer determination, since his passing it's felt like the winning mentality had started to fade, and they would continue to be in and around for many trophies, but the following decade, that ruthless winning atmosphere clearly become diluted and losing a bit of its shine.
Yeah, and it's just, I think it's quite ironic how, you know, losing him then is timed with then Mönchengladbach coming to the fore and things like that. And in the following 70-71 season, Mönchengladbach would make it back-to-back Bundesliga titles as Cologne's league form floundered, and once again the Billy Goats would find refuge in the DFB Pokal, battling it to the final.
But once again, they'd be defeated in a final. Not by a second division team, thankfully, this time, but by Bayern Munich, losing 2-1 in extra time. Köln would even take the early advantage thanks to Bernd Rupp's goal in the 24th minute, but Beckenbauer equalised before the hour mark, and Egder Schneider would win it in the 118th minute. Despite another cup final loss due to Bayern finishing second in the league but winning the Pokal, they'd be sent to the Cup Winners' Cup and their UEFA Cup slot would be awarded to the Billy Goats.
This would see Cologne travel to Saint-Étienne in the first round, the first leg drawing 1-1 in central France. And they would win 2-1 at home, which would see them face up with a familiar team in Dundee, who they'd played when they featured in the European Cup for the first time. Cologne would do better than their 8-5 aggregate loss last time around, and even took a 2-1 win at home in the first leg to take to the second leg in Dundee.
Back at Dens Park, Dundee would take the lead through John Duncan, but Heinz Simmet and Heinz Fleur would give Cologne a 4-2 aggregate lead. But a late fight back from Dundee saw John Duncan get two more to complete his hat-trick and level the tie at 4-4, before an 89th minute winner from Robert Angus Wilson would break Köln hearts and thus seeing their first journey in the UEFA Cup come to an end. Köln fans would be given some relief as Mönchengladbach failed to make it three Bundesliga titles in a row, with both sets of fans watching on as Bayern Munich romped to the Bundesliga title.
In the following 72-73 season, Cologne could celebrate finishing above their Gladbach rivals for the first time in four seasons and were competitive in the league, finishing second, but it would be Mönchengladbach having the last laugh as the two teams faced off in the Pokal final. Bayern winning the league, it was the last chance for both of these teams to grab some silverware for the year.
Despite Borussia's resurgence, it would be Köln that would head into the final as favourites. Remember, they had reached the stage three times over the prior five seasons, and Gladbach had to contend with unhappiness in the camp between Hennes Weisweiler and one of his star players, Gunter Netzler. An attendance of 69,000 at the Rheinstadion in Dusseldorf would be treated to what would be described as one of the best high-energy and exciting games by Kicker magazine post-match.
Herbert Wimmer would give Gladbach the lead just after 24 minutes into the final, but Cologne's Herbert Human would equalise just before half-time. Gladbach fans demanded Netzler to come off the bench in the second half, but headstrong Hennes would not be pressured.
Köln's goalkeeper Gerhard Welt would pull off some heroics to save Jupp Henkes' penalty, and Köln would respond with their own pressure that resulted in smacking the woodwork twice. In the 90th minute, Henkes would also hit the woodwork for Gladbach, and somehow the roller coaster of a tie was heading to extra time.
The continued pressure to get Netzer on the pitch began to pile up and was falling on deaf ears. Gunter would take the matter into his own hands. He spoke to the exhausted Christian Kulik, Borussia's centre midfielder, asking whether he still felt fit. When Kulik expressed some doubt, Gunter stripped off his training jacket before quickly informing Hennes that he would be coming on, stating, "I'll play now then."
Worst of all for Köln fans, just minutes after his substitution, with just his second touch of the ball, Gunter Netzler would score what would prove to be the winner. His first was to set up a 1-2 with Rainer Bonhof. As the ball worked back to Gunter in the box, he struck it past an outstretched Welt. Gunter would later retell the story of this goal as the luckiest moment of my footballing career, as he hit the ball with the wrong part of his foot and in turn accidentally outfoxed the goalkeeper too. Despite this slice of luck, the winner would be voted goal of the year. For the Gladbacher, it was the third cup final in 4 years that they had lost. But it wouldn't be until Hennes sensationally returned to Köln after a one-year stint at Barcelona that the trophies would start to return to FC. When things didn't work out in Spain and it looked obvious that Hennes was going to be on the market come the summer, FC Köln, Fortuna Düsseldorf and MSV Duisburg immediately jumped at the opportunity to try lure him back to their neck of the woods in Germany. But it was the Billy Goats that laid out the most appealing project for the local man, with Kicker journalists describing the move with praise but caution for Köln, stating, "Having Weisweiler as coach can be a stimulus for the team, but it can also be a burden. There will certainly be a lot of people, especially amongst the club's own supporters, who will think with Weisweiler as coach, FC Köln will automatically become champions."
I mean, you can't blame them, can you, for seeing what he's achieved before and then see if he can bring the good times back. And his return triggered euphoria in Cologne. The season ticket sales increased and Cologne were at the top of the list of favourites for the 76-77 title. And in fact, Cologne got off to a dream start with the Spain homecoming.
He has two players at the near post, Neumann and Dietmüller. There it is, look. On the volley there. Corner, look at that crowd going wild with delight, naturally enough. Heinz Zimmer in his 400th league game, making it 2-0. Hook along with a fine goal, a fine first-time effort.
After five victories, SC Köln stood at the top of the table with 14 goals scored, 2 conceded and 10 points collected. But things would surely be knocked off course with losses to Bayern Munich and a club not far from us, Tennis Borussia Berlin. Fun fact, Köln and TB would rack up one of the joint highest scoring fixtures in Bundesliga history, scoring 12 goals. FC Köln scored 8 and Tennis Borussia Berlin scored 4 in the returning fixture during this season.
Tennis would be tasked with changing the Flandern team and refocusing it and bringing some success back. This came with some problems as Weisweiler began to lose trust in the leader of Cologne's midfield in Wolfgang Overath. He'd been part of the Billy Goats for 14 Bundesliga seasons, racking up 543 appearances. But now in the latter stages of his career at 34 years old, Tennis wanted more than Wolfgang could do and provide defensively. Tensions would actually be sparked publicly as Tennis helped guide Cologne to the final of another Pokal. They would take the lead thanks to Dieter Müller, but Hertha BSC would equalise in Hanover just before the hour mark.
As the game was trundling towards extra time, Weisweiler substituted Overath and then dropped him from the resulting replay 3 days later. A sole Dieter Müller goal would be enough to see the DFB Pokal return back to Cologne, plus ending the unwanted streak of cup final losses too. But despite the celebrations, this would be the last time Wolfgang Overath would feature for Köln, so bittersweet for some fans and for Wolfgang Overath too. Weisweiler stuck to his tried and tested path with trusting in youth and promoted 5 players to the first team ahead of the 77-78 season. He relied on an unchanged squad, with Heinz Flohr being the main linchpin of his new team.
And if Cologne fans were unconvinced this was the right path to take, on match day 3 against Werder Bremen, Dieter Müller scored the most goals by a single player in a Bundesliga match with a 7-2 win, with Dieter getting 6 himself. However, we found an interesting little side story on this. However, there was no television cameramen there because they were all on strike that day, so there's no known footage of Müller's goals.
Such a shame that these goals have been lost to time, because I'd love to see Dieter Müller working his magic. This still stands as a record today, and I can't imagine after that type of result, many would be doubting Hennes's methods after that. Things would click into gear as they fought with the team Hennes had pioneered in Mönchengladbach for the Bundesliga title to the very last day of the season. More specifically, SC Köln led the league for more than half the season, claiming top spot on matchday 13. Mönchengladbach were tasked with piling on the pressure throughout the season, but couldn't leapfrog the Billy Goats.
It would all come down to the final game of the season, with both teams tied on points, but Cologne had a plus 10 advantage on goal difference. Add to that, Cologne were playing away to an already relegated St. Pauli, while Borussia had to face off against mid-table Borussia Dortmund. So that sounds like it's lined up perfectly for FC Cologne, you'd think. But you wouldn't be wrong, because Cologne's new main man, Heinz Flohr, got them 1-0 up before half-time in Hamburg. Meanwhile, Mönchengladbach were doing their best to be the party poopers, running to a 6-0 lead before half-time, closing the gap to just 5 goals. Like, surely they can't do this.
Oh, this is definitely the era of the transistor radio and trying to figure out, well, they've scored 5. Oh dear, and then getting the calculators out and trying to figure out, where were we in the table? How many did they need to score? God, at half-time it must have been very nervy. The determined Gladbach continued to tally up the goals as well, past the deflated BVB, and come the final whistle, Borussia had destroyed Dortmund with a 12-0 win. Before the match, and even with the half-time scores, this would have been enough to hand Mönchengladbach the Bundesliga title. But had things stayed the same in Hamburg? Had St. Pauli allowed them to leapfrog their rivals at the last hurdle to win the Bundesliga? Well, just when Gladbach thought they may have the faintest sniff of overturning the goal difference, Köln had thankfully pushed 4 more goals past St. Pauli and won 5-0, and thus winning their second ever Bundesliga title in somewhat remarkable last day drama.
Absolute drama. And like, to go into that, like, knowing you need to overturn that deficit and then score 12 and then still not win it, it must be pretty good. Also, imagine if like the kickoffs were staggered and they went out first and won 12-0, then, you know, if you're Cologne, you would be absolutely like on edge. Like,
talk about TV coverage, I'd love to imagine having both these, imagine watching with a beer, trying to keep track of both these games happening at the same time.
If you got like goal rush on the red button or something,
I'd be pissed that I only have one beer, or maybe one Kolsch. But anyway, it's still a Bundesliga record for the lowest margin of points between the champions and runners-up, being 0 points and a mere plus 3 goal difference.
Hennes Weisweiler, bei allen Erfolgen, die sie in ihrer Trainerlaufbahn hatten, das Double ist der größte Erfolg in diesem Jahr. Wie fühlt sich der Trainer nach so langer, schwer getaner Arbeit?
Es war eine aufregende Geschichte, gerade in den letzten Wochen. Und ich bin glücklich, dass diese Mannschaft es geschafft hat.
Hennes Weisweiler, ich weiß, dass das Thema fast, als wenn man über die Verwandtschaft spricht, Borussia Mönchengladbach holt auf, hat es sie bedrückt, immer wieder hören zu müssen, ein Tor mehr, ein Tor mehr. Zur Halbzeit war, glaube ich, für sie die kritischste Zeit, ja, als es hier nur 1-0 stand, in Düsseldorf aber 6-0.
Ja, ich war zu sehr mit meinem Spiel beschäftigt, deshalb habe ich zwar das Ergebnis gewusst, aber habe mir da keine Gedanken drüber gemacht.
Das hat sie nicht belastet, Hennes Weiß.
Nein.
Morgen geht es zum Empfang. Ein großer Kölner mit einer großen Mannschaft in seiner Heimatstadt gefeiert.
Ja, danke schön.
Hennes would improve this incredible domestic finish by guiding Köln to the DFB Pokal final for consecutive years too, facing off against local rival once again, but not Gladbach this time. They'd been dumped out of the quarters by Werder Bremen, but in fact it'd be Fortuna Düsseldorf.
Köln would defend their crowd in front of a packed 70,000 crowd in Gelsenkirchen. A 2-0 win would get Köln the Pokal and thus the double. FC would at the time move alongside Bayern Munich as the only two clubs to win the double during the Bundesliga era. The club has inducted two more members in Borussia Dortmund, managed by Klopp in 11-12, and Werder Bremen in 03-04.
When Köln won the double, Bayern had only done it once at that point. How many times have they won the double now though, Mark? Can you guess?
Double 10 at least.
It's in fact 13.
Wow.
With two of those being trebles as well, just to add, just to throw in the European Cup in there as well.
It's just disgusting.
At one point, Köln were on par with the Bavarian juggernaut, so fair play to FC Köln.
Just to look at that, the double winning team, we picked out a couple of notable players within the Köln squad. One that stood out to us was Yoshihiko Okudera, who was the first Japanese footballer to play professionally in Europe, as well as being the first Asian player to score in the European Cup while playing for Köln.
In the summer of 1977, during his Japanese team's trip to Germany, he was spotted by coach Hennes Weisweiler, and after being offered a contract by Köln, he joined the club, simple as that. His return to Japan in 1986, after spells with Hertha and Bremen too, spurred professionalisation of the Japanese game, which had been stuck in kind of amateur semi-pro play for decades. He was the first native-born professional player in his home league, as before only foreigners, usually Brazilians, were paid strictly to play football by the clubs. And even more bizarrely, and we couldn't believe this when we read it, in June of 2008, Okudera was appointed by Plymouth Argyle, yes, Plymouth Argyle, football league side Plymouth Argyle, as being tasked with their global ambassador role and further strengthening the club's profile in Asia. He'd had no prior connection to Plymouth before this, nothing, no, they played a friendly, or he'd featured against them or something, nothing. Just randomly, Plymouth Argyle have plucked Okudera to be their ambassador.
I think this has to be one of the most bizarre things I've ever read. And we really tried to research, like, is this for real? Like, we found a couple of articles, but we couldn't, yeah, very, very random. But I think what's really cool, yeah, his return to Japan, like, sparking this professionalisation of the game. Like, seeing what Weisweiler had done for, like, Köln, I think, like, is there, could he put his hat in the ring and say he had a slight claim in professionalising the Japanese leagues, maybe? Like,
we move on to another player. We have Roger Van Gool. Belgian forward Van Gool joined FC Köln in doing so, becoming the first player in German football to be signed for a transfer fee of 1 million Deutschmarks. He would score 28 goals in 98 games for FC Köln before leaving for Coventry City.
And of course, we've got to mention Dieter Müller, as you already mentioned, scored 6 goals in one game, but was just a goal machine in general. Just a snapshot of his Köln career. His first season, 17 in 31. The next following season, he scores 24 goals, 14 goals, 34, 24, 8, 21, 17. Give him 159 goals in just under 250 games, which is pretty outrageous.
And then lastly, we have Wolfgang Weber. Although Weber did not make league appearance this season, he is worthy of a mention for being the man who scored Germany's last gasp equaliser against England in the 1966 World Cup, forcing the game to extra time. But unfortunately, as we all know, Jeff Hurst went and got his hat-trick goal and brought the cup back, or didn't bring it back because it was being played in Wembley, but brought the cup to England.
Secured its current location.
But on the back of this amazing double triumph here in FC Köln, this is where we're going to call it wraps on part one of this episode.
And yeah, thanks for joining us for part one. Make sure you stay tuned for part two dropping soon, and join us for the rest of the FC Köln journey, where we'll take in many, many continental adventures. Lots of Lukas Podolski content, which of course everybody's going to love, and bringing us right up to the present day. And, you know, I'm sure we can find an excuse to play the Anthony Modeste song.
FC Köln fans, please get in touch. Let us know. Maybe you got a slight detail wrong. Tell us your stories of FC Köln in the past or even in the modern day. And yeah, we love to hear your stories. And keep an eye out for our traditional shirt giveaway on our social media. We'll be popping that up soon. And apart from that, yeah, there's not much else to talk about here. We'll be back with part two very soon. And yeah, I'm Joseph Corlett.
I'm Mark Reeves.
It's been the Journeyman Podcast. See you all guys next time.
See you next time.